Oh, it's Steve Nash and the wrong David Lee go on stage.
Hi, welcome back to Wild Business Growth. I am your host, Max Brandstetter from Max Podcasting. This is where you can hear from a wild entrepreneur turning wild ideas into wild growth. And this is episode Heinz 357. You'll need to catch up on that joke. Today's guest is David Lee, the co-founder and CEO of Nex, spelled N-E-X. They are the creators of Nex Playground, the little smart cube that sits below your TV in your living room, transforms your living room with all sorts of cool games. And here's the best part. It's without a controller. In this episode, you'll hear all about that, including their subscription model. You'll hear about the company that David sold to Apple and his experience there and with that. And everything from who the real David Lee is, whether it's him or the former NBA player, to aliens. It is the real David Lee. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with David Lee, co-founder and CEO of Nex, known for Nex Playground, one of the coolest video game gaming console things that you'll ever hear about. And you don't even need any controllers or anything like that, but David, so excited to speak with you today. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. We're going to get into all things gaming life. We're going to, for those of you watching on video, this is a very intentional wearing of a basketball jersey by me. We'll talk some basketball as well. But before that, so you were one of the few people that had an incredible journey of starting a company that then got acquired by Apple. And obviously people can speak forever about how cool of a company Apple is and all the innovation and creativity there. So for your journey, you don't need to give us like the full background, but I'm just curious, what's the biggest thing that stuck with you or that you learned from building a company that actually could get acquired by Apple?
Wow. What a question to get started. The first startup I built was building online spreadsheet. And it was the beginning of Web 2.0 when Reddit is just get started. I think get started around that time. Building web apps, you know, and Web 2.0 is about like not just, oh, you can build a website, just one-way publishing. It's about, hey, you can also read and write, right? So it's like, you know, you can start editing the web, so they're making contributions. Web apps begin to become a thing. And I remember at that time, I'm reading the blog of Paul Graham, the founder of Y Combinator. I was in Hong Kong, so it's like, you know, he has influenced, you know, way beyond America. And he talked about like having an online spreadsheet make sense, having a lot of people, you know, edit the same thing together make sense. We were building something similar. We were, at that time, we're still in like more like an agency, helping other people write web apps. And say, and I was serving a customer, which is the Hong Kong Arts Festival. Imagine Hong Kong Arts Festival. Okay. They are managing millions in budget, all in spreadsheets. They have like 20 something artists, you know, more organizing the budget. We come in and say, hey, we can do you, we can help you collaborate better. And end up what we deliver to them is like, hey, these guys probably don't know anything other than operating on spreadsheets. So let's just make that spreadsheet like collaborable. Like the people probably can add the same thing at the same time. It's like a beginning of us building something, solving real problem. And they love it. So we end up with productizing that and it become one of the earliest online spreadsheets in the world. We shipped that 2 months before Google shipped on their Google spreadsheets. And we have a hell of a ride of like, you know, building that product and getting a lot of people use it. Google joining the market just make so many more people aware of this. And we are one of the top online spreadsheets out there and it eventually get acquired by Apple. It's part of this, just you know, you think something is right, you have experience of why this makes sense and you build it and you're obsessed about it and make it one of the world's best. and people pay attention. Eventually, Apple reached out and said, you guys want to join us? And we joined Apple and have a rare chance to work for Steve Jobs. And then, you know, spend 8 years at Apple, build, like bring in the technologies we allowed iWork suite to be collaborative. So multiple people can work on the same document at the same time across native apps and web apps. So we spend a lot of time to do just that. When you do something and push it to the world best, then you would, you know, have the opportunity to get discovered, have an opportunity to basically, like, you know, rise to the global stage and make a big impact.
What is it about Apple, this seemingly larger than life company, what is it from their perspective you think that, like, attracted them to you, attracted you to them? I always get that messed up. What is it that stood out about that company that, like, this is really Apple worthy?
Let's talk a little bit about, like, what's the process of shipping a product at Apple? Oh my God. So we have a product already. But to ship a product inside of Apple took us 4.5 years. So because Apple want to keep a secret, they keep, like, the old product running for a long time, for years, you know, the proxy running. Just apparently, hey, the Etigree guys just disappear. But the product kept running. But we were already working for Apple and building the Apple version of the online productivity suite, basically building web apps for Apple. The first 3.5 years is literally just keep building demos and to show to Steve many times. And Steve would challenge you to do some of the craziest thing. And web apps that are worthwhile of the Apple logo, is the bar is very high. You know, you need to feel like butter. The scrolling and everything, and the web processor need to render War and Peace. War and Peace have 3 million characters on it. I think at that time, Google can only take 1 million, and that's it. I don't know how much they can do now, but the bar is very high. It's also very challenging, and everything is like deep, hard, challenging technical problems. And to get to something that's world-class. So it starts with what you want your customer to have, like high fidelity, it render and looks as beautiful as what's native, being rendered natively. So we need to kind of touch pretty deep technologies on the web and do something pretty crazy. And need to be fast as well. So we also spend a lot of time on optimizations. Those are the skills that are so valuable and so transferable when we do something else too. Basically making something that's fast, meaning that you can be the best, or you can be the first, you know, when something new come up and you are the first to have an optimized version of that. And like normally when new technology appear, it always be the person who actually can optimize it in so well that it become usable, it become wow. So why is it in Apple? I think I learned a couple of things in Apple I still like, become a little bit more like life lessons. So there's a couple of things. First is Steve Jobs' reality distortion view. So people heard about, okay, well, Steve have this superpower, the reality distortion view, distort reality. Ooh. But if you peel the onion and understand, hey, what exactly is that thing that really pull people into ambitious project? It's just a really big idea. Idea that's worth doing, idea that's worth sinking your life into. So, you know, that's the first thing I learned at Apple. Like, you know, the behind the reality distortion field is actually a really big idea that really pull minds. You feel in Apple, you know, when Steve talk about certain things, you feel you're drawn to it. You just feel you are, I just attracted to execute that and do that because this is great. That would be great if this thing exists. That is the first thing. The second thing is Apple have a really deep demo culture. So the storytelling that all these meetings are centered around demos. Demos actually is a beautiful thing. It's basically just focusing on the user. How you take user from point A to point B. And how you product solve a problem. No data. not saying that they do, that Apple never, like, yeah, there would be some data informed as well, but the way that you talk about it is talk about the problem and now how, like, the product take user from point A to point B. Like, everything else disappear. So again, just focusing on the problem and the solution. And, you know, that's the second thing that I learned in Apple. I think it's just become life lessons as well, and how we can keep focusing on the user, focusing on the problem, and do something great.
Well, speaking of something great and something with really, really cool design, which is clearly something that is just everywhere, you know, omnipresent in Apple, let's talk Next, the Next Playground. And before we get to Next Playground as it is today, a little birdie told me that in the early, early days, the idea actually had to do with basketball. Can you take us back to basketball and what you had developed originally?
It was 2017. I left Apple and looking for my next idea. So I did not leave with an idea in mind already. I just left and looking for the next thing to do. People know me, know that I love basketball. I go distance in making sure that every week we have a pickup game. And that thing's going on for over 10 years. So after Apple, so hey, should we connect with myself, we connect with world, what should I be doing? Hey, maybe do something with basketball, something that we love. And it's complete change of lane. Feel like, hey, you build up so much in like being the world productivity expert and throw away all of that. And now about, let's do something basketball related, which is extremely rejuvenating, and doing something that's like, you know, you're genuinely excited about what we can do there. And we end up building one of the world's first edge AI application. So using AI to understand video, to track basketball shots. It's a really niche idea, I would say. It's like people who want to track their shots are the people who obsess about basketball. Just like what a nerd basketball player would do. Hey, I want to track my shots so that I can count my make miss, count my, you know, where I shoot it. So we push it pretty far. And we built like the world's first basketball training app called Home Court. And it was using AI on the edge to process video in real time to understand basketball shots, understand whether it make or miss, and keep counting. And also how you take it as well, where you take it from, and all the mechanics, like the angle, like how high you jump, how fast you move before put up a shot, how long you hold the ball before you put up a shot, that the time taken for that to get a shot up. So all these, like, you know, very interesting, and we dive pretty deep into that. And that was the first thing it did before we it leads to the journey of Next Playground, but this is the first thing we did, which is pretty wonderful.
We especially need home court today, because if you look at the NBA today, people are taking like 7 steps and it's not being called a travel. So we need to track that movement too. But it sounds like something created by somebody who plays a pickup game every week for 10 years. So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we love that journey too. It's about how we break down a complicated problem, right? Hey, what a camera can see. You see the hoop, you see the board, you see the lines, you see the ball, you see the players. And we want to understand everything. And breaking that problem down and getting to a deep understanding of what's in front of camera in real time, I think it still is a pretty incredible achievement that we've made just using a phone camera. So it's a phone camera on a tripod, looking at a basketball court, understand everything, and extracting intelligence in real time. It's a wonderful solution to a very small problem.
So in that, you know, still focused on home court, the camera and the AI tracking and that, like, that's super cool technology. What can you give us some behind the scenes of how, I guess, the aha moment for that technology particularly?
It starts with, we want to do that and break that problem down into smaller problems and solve those things one by one. It begins with, I cold call the basketball coach around my area. So I get to become friend to the basketball coach in Monta Vista High, Cupertino High, and all the Los Altos High, and all these like high school basketball coach around the area, so that allow me to just go into their gym.
I thought you were going to say Steve Kerr next.
Well, we actually went to Duke, so Coach K, similar caliber.
Yeah, not bad. He hasn't done much in his career.
to capture training videos. So we actually capture a lot of video and understand how the ball goes through the net. And when you go to high school, when you go to college, you say, wow, college kids can get the ball to go through the net like that. Everything's just so fast, so clean. It's a swish. And we don't have this data before. We think this is a miss because it's just like go through it so fast. Because normally when you make the baskets made, right? Like the ball kind of go through it, it just got the net, like you slow it down a little bit. And when you go to Stanford, for example, wow, the ball can go through the net this fast, can be this good. And okay, well, we need to add some more training data so that we can detect the data doesn't make. So there's a lot of data collections, and I remember drive around to capture like image of basketball hoops, collect a lot of data myself. Rebound a lot of ball myself, tens of thousands, probably 100,000 rebounds that I did for high school kids shaking their sweaty hands. That was quite a whole year. To just do this. It's a lot of data collection, a lot of like breakdown, and a lot of hard math as well. So you can imagine how the when taken from the camera, right? So the all the court line feel distorted, and then we work on an algorithm to basically like turn it back to a bird eye view from that. So there's a lot of camera projection math there. It's fun, and I remember my team. Hey, David, I don't know whether this is a big problem, but it's a fun problem. So let's try to solve it first and see how we go from there. It's challenging, it's fun, and we have a good time.
When did the pivot happen? When did you know that actually it's not just basketball? There's potential here using this technology for like a video game, family play system.
How it all started is that we solved that very niche problem beautifully. To the point where like Apple said, wow, you guys did something amazing. Like, how about you talk about it, on stage in 2018 iPhone XS announcement event. And we did that, and we get NBA attention as well. So NBA invested in us the next year, hoping that we help them find the next Stephen Curry all over the world, not just in the US, but all over the world. That was their hope, that the app that we created, like help to bring training to kids worldwide, and then with that find the next Stephen Curry. But we know this is a very niche problem, so who in the right mind would take their phone out, put it on the tripod, and track their own shots, and when they're doing shooting workout? Very few people in the world would do that. We want to do more. We want to make something that's meaningful to more people. So we begin to think about what other use cases we can do. So home court on a tripod, use the rear facing camera to capture what's in front of it. Then we say, hey, maybe we can use the front facing camera as well to give some interactive feedback when you're doing other form of practices, like your ball handling or your agility. So can we do more there? So we begin to explore those applications. And then pandemic hits the next year. Those part of home court went viral, grow much faster than the shot tracking part of home court. The agility one grew 40 times. So 40 times usage. All of a sudden, like 500,000 people. Wow, like we thought we have a pretty niche app. Then like 500,000 people is like using it. We reach 500,000 monthly active user. People come in and they're not even playing, they're not even basketball player. They're a player for all kinds of sports. So that gives us inspiration to do the first pivot. Hey, how about we take those things out and we create another app called Active Arcade and see how that goes. And Active Arcade went even more viral than home court. But we begin to learn what's actually working. And we find that the retention of using Active Arcade on iPad is 3 times of home court. And the retention of anyone who connect their phone to the TV or the tablet to TV and use it there is 10x the retention. So we finally discovered we're actually building for the wrong platform. We need to find what I called at that time a 65-inch iPad. So a big device with camera and have processing that can do it. I cannot find one. So end up that one of the co-founder, hey, let's just build one. And that's how we begin the journey of building Next Playground and get to where we are today. It's a hell of a journey, a hell of a pivot. From home court, about the training app, all of a sudden to like a motion game console, we call an active play system. So it's quite a journey.
Well, I have to say that you have the cutest game console of all time. Because anybody, look it up, or if you're watching on video, it's like a cube that, what is it, like a few inches by a few inches?
Yeah.
It's pretty small.
Yeah. Yep, 3-inch cube. That's what we have here.
So like if you have it in your living room, it doesn't disrupt the space at all. And then when you watch the videos of what this thing can do, it's unbelievable, the different games. Now you've gotten to the point where you're partnering with like Peppa Pig, Bluey, all, you know, our daughter, I'm sure, is soon to be favorite things. You know, on the latest flight we were on, she liked the seat back screen. So she was just fast forwarding through all those. But in time, she'll sit there and watch those. But anyway, you know, this thing has really exploded in terms of the potential and, you know, the sales now as well. On that design note, how did you, you know, channeling your inner Steve Jobs, how did you guys get to the point that you're able to put all this amazing technology in camera in like such a cute little box, if you'll call it?
When we explore the industrial design of it, we write the design brief. So, you know, our VP of design, Josh Finno, who also spent a lot of time in Apple before, leading that effort. But he cannot do everything himself. So we do go out to a couple industrial design firm, give them the brief, and ask them to come up with a proposal of what that could look like. And then we get a proposal from Level, who is an industrial design firm, woman-led, mom-led, industrial design firm based in San Francisco. Their design is different. They find out, oh, we get it. It's like, you know, when you say, hey, you build a game console and someone come in with like something looks like a game console, and they come in with something very completely different. When we see it, we just fall in love with the design. And it's our, they call it design Rubik. It's just like, actually look like, little bit look like a Rubik cubes. Is we need to do a lot in after that. It's just like, hey, is it even possible to do it like this? When the design come out and we're just like, wow, this is great. And then the work begin to try to make it work. That is the, when something click, it just begin the quest. Hey, I know this is difficult, but then more people want to pick up on that challenge because it's fun. When it become a challenge to our like mechanical design and like the rest of the hardware design, need to basically fit everything into one small cube form factor, you get to see everybody actually excited about working on that project. It's like, and like go back to the Apple thing again, it's just like when you have something great, you just pull people in. People want to make it happen. People want you, because like Next all by itself cannot do everything. It's important that we, at that point when we start building Next Playground, we have 40 people. We lean in on our partners to help us to bring their superpower onto the table. So we have partnership with the SoC vendor, AM Logic, who is a leader in set-up box chipset manufacturing. We are working with Skyworth Digital, who have bring in their manufacturing and mechanical design capabilities into the project. And Level, doing industrial design, is like, you know, is next in the, is in the center, but we pull in a lot of great people to make it possible. It's just incredible to see. You can think about in the 2023, we actually did it in 1 year. I was in the beginning of 2023, I was just carrying like a 3D printed model. Hey, we want to make it happen, and just keep going around and asking for help to build this product. And the whole thing happened in 1 year. And the singular focus, the whole team coming together, not just Next, but like our partners come together and make one thing possible with one goal to make sure the first 5,000 people got it. We only have money to create 5,000 units but at that time. So that's all we have. And we were only one goal to make the first 5,000 units or for first 5,000 customers really happy about our product is highlight of the career.
You hear people talk about beauty and constraint and how much amazing things come out of that. One of my old coworkers, a mentor of mine, Ken Krasnow, back when I was in the corporate world, he'd always talk about beauty and constraint. And apparently there's some stories about Mick Jagger would learn to dance in like very tight quarters. And like, that's kind of why he dances the way he does. But anyway, you had the physical constraint there of like, cool, how do we get everything into the box? And then basically a time constraint there as well. You did this all in 1 year. How do you think you and the team were able to achieve such like a seemingly impossible task and stay so focused on that?
First of all, that is the last bet that we can make. I don't think Nix can come around to have another try if that fail. When it become clear, hey, this is the possibly last thing we can do together. At that point, it's 2023, right? The company started 2017. So we are like, you know, more than 5 years in already into this. And over the 5 years, we build a tech, we start building content with Homecoin Active Arcade and subsequent something other things that we also built on mobile as well. But mobile was the wrong platform for the experience we were creating. So we now end up curating the platform so that our tech, our content can shine and become that unifying factor that get everyone to do one thing only. And the team is incredible. Try to do everything right. I remember those times. I can certainly be really thankful that like we all pour our hearts into it, because it's not just that 1 year, but it's all the work that accumulated before finally get to a point where this is arguably the best experience that we ever create and deliver to our customers. And it ended up with what cut through the noise as well.
It's really inspiring just hearing about like the design, like the actual hard product, like the actual physical product and what went into that. And we barely even talked about the games yet. So like I was just binging earlier, absolutely loving clips about, you know, what the actual gameplay looks like and what, you know, we mentioned the Peppa Pig and the Bluey, but like you've partnered with these really, really cool franchises and TV shows out there and, you know, Sesame Street as well. And creating games that fit, you know, those brands incredibly well, but are also super fun for families, you know, especially kids. What is your philosophy in terms of adding more games, you know, that are playable on Next Playground?
At the beginning, we don't have all these partnerships yet. It's a small company who would trust us. But because we have Homecourt, because NBA behind Homecourt, when we start building motion experiences, we have an early partnership with Hasbro. We are still really thankful for Hasbro to be the first one to believe in us. And they offer us Peppa Pig, which is like certainly one of the crown jewel IP. And I remember the one thing that we are promising them is this is a big franchise and we cannot do any harm to the franchise. That's the beginning of that we deeply care about trust and safety. We are creating something that is like certainly unique to the brand. Like Peppa Pig, you think about jumping in a muddy puddle very quickly. With Nix Playground, you can really jumping in a muddy puddle. So we managed to get the license of creating a Peppa Pig game. So Peppa Pig is actually one of the games that is shipped in Playground when we launch. And we have 18 other original IP titles that we created and kind of accumulated over time. We ship Active Arcade there as well. And then we have other things we have curated, and we also bring in a few partners to curate for the platform. So we ship the initial product with 19 games. And now it's grown to over 60 already. But the journey is more like that we create a platform that focusing on trust and safety. Focus on safety, privacy, security, because it's a platform designed for families. And once we have that unique position, create a safe space for brand to connect with, like, you know, the family that we are serving. So we are serving, also have our own segment that we're serving family of young kids first. And then when Pepper is there, Sesame Workshop come on board. We are partnership with Sesame Workshop. And then others like Mattel and Barbie and NBC Universal with Gabby Dollhouse, How to Train the Dragon, Kung Fu Panda, and then Paramount with TMNT, and then Bluey come on board. And then we build out our bigger portfolio of licensed IP games and original IP games on the platform and create a rich experience for our customers. And we have exciting content roadmap for this year as well. I'm really excited about it. So that's how we build up a library that would, I think that subscription model just works so well in a way that we don't need to think about other ways to monetize our customers. Unlike, you know, games on mobile, or even games on PC, not just premium purchase, something with DLC, like, you know, some are ad-supported, some are having other mechanics. We don't need any of that. We just, hey, like a simple, honest model of $89 a year, access the whole library of games, and we keep surprise and delight our customer for a whole year. And we keep doing that. It's exciting and liberating as well. So we can be only focusing on how we bring in great content, great partners, great original IP onto the platform and keep serving our customer better and better.
That's something that's transferable across so many different types of businesses. We've seen companies do subscription models really well, and then we've seen other ones totally butcher it and, you know, can make or break a company. What advice do you have for fellow entrepreneurs out there that are considering a subscription model?
So subscription model mean one thing. You need to build a deep relationship with your customers. You need to have your customer at heart. You need to give more than you take. And the beauty of subscription model is when you have a bigger base, you will have more resources to invest in the offering. Essentially, basically, your customer help you make the product better and better. So we have this idea of that, hey, with this model, we actually keep coming back to the market every week with a better product. Because we keep shipping updates, new games, you know, on an ongoing basis. It's really about building trust. It's really about, like, it's a non-transactional relationship. It's really about solving our problem that is recurring as well. Yeah, just deliver the value that, you know, you are to deliver. You know, serving what I call timeless consumer needs or timeless human needs. You know, our position is to serve the needs to move, the needs to connect with family, with friends, the needs to grow, and the need to have fun. And we would always thinking about everything we do, think about our customers, think about how we surprise and delight them. It's a commitment. It's an ongoing commitment to do something that's better and better.
Well, you absolutely read my mind. And I think you AI camera tracked what's going on in my brain too, because we're gonna wrap up with something fun here. We want to wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it? So we have a basketball competition. There's a hoop behind you. No, I'm just kidding. All right, let's get wild. Speaking of basketball, who is an NBA player that you say you try to model your game after the most?
JJ Redick.
Oh. Well, that's a great answer. Also, now he's known as the Lakers coach, but before that, I remember growing up, you know, because people are very either hate Duke or love Duke. He was at the time one of the most hated and hateable college players of all time, but that's because he was so good and, you know, like one of the best 3-point shooters of all time. So
it is more just on court and off the court as well. So catch and shooter. And it's also my role, like I'm shooting guard too when I play, catch and shoot. There's a lot I can learn from him on that play style. And second, he's so articulative. He speaks so well. I remember one time, he's also an investor in Knicks as well.
Oh, that's all. Congrats on that.
And we have a chance that we can, you know, interview him. Wow, just listening to him and how articulative he is give me goosebumps. So, JJ Redick, 100%.
Yeah, the modern day Renaissance man with basketball player turned podcaster turned broadcaster, now coach, investor as well. It's really cool. You're getting to work with him a lot. All right. I saw that you studied at the University of Hong Kong, which is something that's probably just a couple hour flight from me. No, it's probably very, very long from me, but you know, you study computer science among other things. What specific class was the most challenging class that you studied there?
Embedded system.
So, sorry, say that again. What's the first word? What system?
Embedded system.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember that was a project that we need to program a train. It ends up, it's a bit excited. Like, I think, like, you know, we have a couple of teammates and there's so many projects going on. It's like, hey, you guys deal with it. I help you deal with other projects. That's what happened. That's one of the harder classes.
I would be absolutely toast in any of that. All right. Steve Jobs, you hear so many stories about him, you know, larger than life figure. What was Steve Jobs actually like in terms of giving feedback on something?
You know, as much as I wanted to be in the same room with him, he normally keeps his meeting very small. So I have not been in the same room with him, but I would be sitting outside. Every time there's a debrief, talk about the feedback he gives, it's always some, wow, is it possible? It's always kind of, you know, have that challenge that it's both difficult and exciting at the same time. Sometimes it's just the feedback is simple, but actually it's very hard to achieve. But if you can achieve that, like that thing no longer, it's just being something that's transparent and something that's like you don't no longer bothering you. So it through the years, it's also trained for me and training a really good eyes for things that's like irritating. And sometimes removing those irritations could be simple, sometimes could be really, really hard. Yeah, so that's feedback from Steve. It's always challenges.
All right, so we're going to go from that seemingly almost fictional character they call Steve Jobs because it's unbelievable all he did in his life to somebody in a realm, I guess, adjacent to that. So last one. Let's say you could have dinner with any video game character ever. Who would that be?
Has been an alien. So book four.
Of course.
Somebody in StarCraft. Before my daughter is born, I'm a big StarCraft 2 fan. Wow, it's like so long time ago, like 14, 15 years ago. Probably meeting with someone from Protoss would be fun to speak with an alien. Because I'm a big alien fan and I'm hoping that the declassification really happen.
Big alien fan and...
Not a big alien fan, I'm just curious. I'm just curious about those things. It's just something that make human feel smaller, something that unify us more, because when we are not alone, I feel that's very unifying. You know, when human beings are not alone, it's very unifying too. Because I'm hoping world peace. I'm hoping that we can drop our differences now that we know we're not the only one out there. I'm hoping for that effect where we need to know a little bit more about those things.
It's a great message and a much more heartfelt message than I expected when I asked about dinner with a video game character. So I appreciate how you keep the surprises coming. David Lee, which by the way, you're a basketball fan. Are you familiar with the former Knicks player, David Lee? Because it is funny. There's the same name.
Yep. And I tell you a funny story. So when I go on stage with Steve Nash on Apple stage in 2018, when we talk about how home court use AI to track motion and basketball shot in real time, I remember somebody make a joke. Oh, it's Steve Nash and the wrong David Lee go on stage.
You're the right David Lee in my book. David, thanks so much. Congrats on everything with the next playground. And home court and everything there. So excited to see what you guys do next and uncover, enjoy more of it. So thanks so much for coming on. Where's the best place? If somebody wants to learn more about Next or Next Playground or just connect with you online, what's your preferred place for that?
Well, you can connect with LinkedIn. I also wrote a blog called playthatmovesyou.com. We have a user community. So if you have a next playground, please join us on Facebook or Reddit or follow us on social media. And you will actually see me replying your message there. And I'm actually pretty active because I think listening to customers, interacting with them are very important for next. So I'm championing those efforts to be out there and just talking to customers.
And further proof that you are the right David Lee. Last thing, final thoughts, just like a few words, maybe a mission or motto, words to live by, whatever you want. Take us home here.
Next mission is to connect families and friends through active play. And we want to build Next into a 100-year company. And a 100-year company will serve timeless human needs to move, to connect, to grow, and to have fun. That's what we live by. And we will keep building from here.
Keep building and keep building, in particular, tiny smart cubes that are so cute and so awesome. Thank you, David, for sharing your next playground story, for coming on Wild Business Growth. Thank you, Wild listeners and Wild viewers, for tuning in. You know where to subscribe or follow if you're not already. And on YouTube, it's at Max Brandstetter for the video versions. Anything else? It is maxpodcasting.com. Said in that voice, exactly. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!